welcome to today's edition of Uncommon Awareness. If you're new to the program, I'm your host, Dr. Lorraine Hurley, and my website is drhurley.net. I encourage you to visit, sign up for the newsletter. We have an unusual guest this morning. He isn't unusual. He's actually quite charming. But how he practices his profession is unusual in that he has combined several skills one would rarely, if ever, find under the shingle of a traditional psychotherapist. Our guest's name is Paul Fox, and he's a family counselor, psychotherapist, and Reiki master who's been working with clients in the Peterborough, Ontario area and surrounding area since the 1990s. Over the years, he's been involved in family and individual counseling and has received training in diverse and esoteric practices such as hypnosis, shamanic journeying, remote viewing, Reiki philosophy, integral theory, and spirituality, just to name a few. And he says here that family and individual counseling is a great way to sort out the challenges that make our lives difficult. Sometimes we struggle, there's that word again, listeners, struggle, for years when help is just around the corner. Oftentimes we feel we must be strong and prove to the world that we can do it alone, but that is often a tragic mistake. Paul has been in a small business owner and worked in corporate manufacturing and academia over the years. So in addition to this, he has some theoretical insight and intense training and academic rigor with Wilfrid Laurier University in Ontario, please pardon me, John F. Kennedy University in California, Yorkville University in New Brunswick, and the Factor in Wattash Faculty of Social Work at the University of Toronto. I am sorry for massacring that. He's a compassionate man with an understanding perspective, and he invites you to consider working with him if there's some aspect of your life that you are struggling with. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Good morning. That's quite an introduction. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm really intrigued and impressed by your work. I mean, when I talk about impressed, I'm impressed to find, you know, as a physician and someone interested in personal growth, I've met many, many psychotherapists, none like you, however.
I'll take that on the positive side.
It is. You know, it is a positive thing, and it's actually so, it inspires me to know that more people within the traditional realms of, you know, just say behavioral health or medicine are reaching out to develop, to fully develop their own minds, their own abilities, because I think it makes for a much more powerful therapeutic encounter for the patient.
You know, you're opening, definitely.
Yeah,
absolutely. So as we individually work on our own path, it opens up our capacity then to have compassion. It opens our capacity for understanding, just to interact with people in our lives and clients and people in general. So absolutely. Yeah.
Right. It just makes for a much more expansive life. Now, what I really love to do is share the guest with our listeners first. So if you wouldn't mind telling us how you got involved in psychotherapy and in the more esoteric practices you utilize. So it sounds to me like you were basically interested in your own personal growth. But I'd like to know what motivated you or what circumstances or experiences in your own life led you to develop such an eclectic toolbox in your practice.
Okay. So kind of starting off where I am today in this moment, I would describe myself as more closely aligned with my personal journey, my personal path, my guidance from spirit, from my higher wisdom. That being said, I still struggle daily, much like everybody else does. I'm a normal, regular kind of a person who has daily challenges, but for sure, you know, I find much more joy in my life today because I'm more closely aligned with, you know, my natural direction, my natural compass, my soul's journey. Now, that'll make a little bit more sense maybe if I describe partly where I come from and how I come to this work. Initially, I come from what I would describe as probably a normal family. So whatever normal means, we often are in a particular experience when we're younger, and because that's our experience, it's normal. And really, that normal experience is really quite a unique experience, and everybody has a unique experience. And we consider it normal, even though it might be profoundly dysfunctional in many, many different ways. Anyway, that being said, yeah. I come from a relatively normal background, but a very left-brained perspective. And by that, you know, I mean, I come from a world, initially anyway, of being very rational, you know, following very logical A plus B plus C type of thinking. And when I wasn't doing that, I would probably describe myself as being unconscious. So I was probably unconscious until I was about, you know, in my mid-30s, early to mid-30s.
Okay. Well, you know, normal is left brain in our world, and then this left brain dominance has led to a tremendous amount of dysfunction, and we're finding out that we really can't, that this is unsustainable. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but I wanted to make that point that, yeah, it's normal, but it's not necessarily workable or sustainable.
Right, right. And for sure that's what happened in my life. It became non-sustainable. It became very non-nurturing. And, you know, ultimately led to me experiencing a variety of different physical symptoms that made me sick and made me kind of refocus my life and pick a new path. But, so, you know, originally I struggled in school for sure in many different aspects, which is interesting because I feel I've done fairly well since then in academia, but originally I struggled quite a bit in junior school and high school, even in university. And I found, because I felt, it's hard to come up with the words, but I guess the words that continue to come to me would be just, I had this sense of sleepwalking.
Yeah.
And I couldn't really, you know, articulate that well. I couldn't put those words to it at the time, for sure. But I did have this gut feel, the sense that life was moving on. I was moving down a particular path. But it was like I was a leaf blowing in the wind. And, you know, even the studies that I initiated in university, so I took chemistry originally, which is probably a huge far cry from what I do today. but I took chemistry, you know, made my way through it, and ended up working in industry. Worked with a variety of different, you know, big multinational food manufacturing companies, and worked my way up through the different ranks. You know, I went kind of from the technical side and working in a lab to then working in management and working my way up and through the ranks. But I always had this gnawing gut feel that I was being blown along like a leaf in the wind. And part of that leaf in the wind sense was, I think, that I was following what I believed were expectations of the world I lived in.
Right.
And, you know, we could have a whole conversation about where do all those expectations come from. But, you know, there were expectations from parents, teachers, our culture, our society, advertising. You know, what does it mean to be a young man in this world? What does it mean to be a grown man in this world? What are the expectations? Anyway, so more or less being this leaf blown in the wind, I worked my way through a variety of different promotions. I seemed to do quite well in industry and would be recognized and promoted. And each time that happened, you know, I had a sense, you know, when I finally get to that next level, there might be something really cool that happens. It could be some insight. There could be, this all might start to make sense to me. And of course, none of that ever came for me anyway.
Right. Well, I'm just, you know, I'm sitting here identifying so profoundly with what you're talking about, because it's really a part of my own path, was that feeling of just, I called it for a long time, a God-shaped void. Even though I was schooled in religion, I wasn't, my life didn't feel, it didn't contain that awesome mystery that I just, you know, felt in my bones life should have, you know, so.
Yeah, absolutely, and that was a sense I had. There was this numb feeling, this feeling that I'm progressing along, but a numbness to it, or a vacancy, a gaping hole of some type that I couldn't really put my finger on but it was affecting me. And I couldn't even, it was strange, I couldn't even really describe how it was affecting me in negative ways. In hindsight, I can look at that and say, wow, that was, how didn't I get that? But, you know, when we're in the middle of something, this tends to be the way, you know, we struggle with things, we feel like we're drowning, we can't really put our finger on what it is, and we don't know where to go with that. And for sure that was me in many ways, as I went through this particular part of my life, for sure. But I had a few interesting things that happened kind of along the way, and one of them was that, you know, in being fairly successful and finally reaching this one point where, you know, I was a plant manager at a particular location and doing quite well, but physically I was breaking down. I was having, you know, this was before the time of carrying cell phones and things, but I carried a pager. And in fact, I carried two pagers, and I was on call 24 hours a day, and I had two pagers. So I was under continual stress, continual load, which kind of compounded some of the issues that I brought from my past, from my childhood, from my life. And anyway, to make a long story short, what ultimately happened was, in the face of me appearing to be incredibly successful to everybody who looked at me, I was literally dying inside.
Yeah.
And so I resigned. And, you know, in that moment, or in that time, I guess, when I resigned from that world, it was a shock to everybody. I mean, neighbors thought I had lost my mind. And who knows?
I can relate. No, I can relate. I left medicine, and and that's the same thing. People just couldn't understand it. But there's our music, Paul. We're going to break. So we're going to pick up right where we've left off with you basically having the courage, the personal fortitude to walk away from what was killing you. And when we come back, listeners, we get to hear more about this story. Really just an amazing way he's put together his practice to work with other people. So stay tuned. Once again, listeners, we are here with Paul Fox, and his website is sacredjourneytherapy.com. That's sacredjourneytherapy.com. It's a beautiful website. There's a lot of information up there. It teaches really expansively. But, Paul, we were at the point in your story where you really had finally succumbed to this feeling of, I'm dying, I can't do this anymore, and you walked away from your job. And to the outside world, you appeared so successful that people couldn't believe you did this.
Right. And, you know, I think when I look at my client base, I see that with a lot of people. You know, and for sure that was my experience. We look around the world. We look at people doing what we do. We look at their smiling faces, and we assume everything must be okay because they're okay. And so what's wrong with me? I must be broken. There must be something wrong with me. But, you know, the reality is there are many, many people that struggle in different areas. But our culture very much doesn't want to know that. Our culture very much wants people to put on a smiling face, you know, get down to it and get to work and make it happen and, you know, produce more of this and more of that. And so it does generate tremendous amount of stress and tremendous amount of, you know, wanting and really needing to keep up an illusion of health and an illusion of satisfaction with life as it is. So for sure, when I stepped out of that world, it challenged a lot of people's ways of thinking. And the easiest way for people to justify that is to just say, well, Paul is crazy.
Right.
And again,
right.
Maybe I was.
Well, no, because that is the mantra of our society, produce and consume, produce and consume. And the more you can produce and the more you can consume, the higher your, quote, status. I mean, this is one of the most, I think, I want to call it malevolent, might be a bit of a strong word, but it really is a psychic, it's psychically traumatic for us to attempt to live that way. That's not what we're made of.
Right, and, you know, the question then is, when is enough enough? You know, so when is my house big enough? When do I have enough money in the bank? When do I have enough cars in the driveway?
Right.
When do I have enough trips to wherever? Yeah, so our measurement of what is it we want in our lives and what actually, what equals success? And, of course, I think that's an individual question and an individual journey for sure. But there is this kind of blanket cultural, societal view of what success is. And it absolutely, in my view anyway, does not fit everybody. It fits a few, for sure, but it doesn't fit everybody. In fact, it fits fewer people than we think it does.
Right.
So anyway, you know, along my journey, as I moved away from doing that kind of work, you know, I was in this time, you know, like the dark night of the soul, I guess, where I'm in limbo land between walking away from what everybody thinks is good and successful and wonderful into nothing. I had no employment, you know, I had a family, young kids at the time, and so it was really a big step, and I'd really like to take credit and say, gee, I did it because I had these grand thoughts, but it didn't happen that way at all. It was really out of terror and fear and sickness and just unable to cope with the world as it was around me. So, you know, I kind of defaulted into it, almost like the leaf blowing in the wind again. But in that dark night of the soul time period, I had a variety of different awakening experiences. And this is really where my life starts to take on different direction. And one of them that kind of one experience that sticks out a bit, my wife was taking yoga at the time at a local studio, and the lady that was running the courses, her husband, Bill, was a medical doctor, but somewhat off the beaten, the regular beaten track as far as medical practitioners go. And so I went to see him because I was, you know, struggling with a lot of things. And, you know, we talked for a long time. And he said, you know, Paul, you really don't know how to breathe. You don't breathe. You know that, eh? And, you know, I thought that was kind of a strange thing for him to say. And, you know, I don't know how to breathe. Well, of course, you know, I do know how to breathe. Of course I do. I'm alive. And what are you talking about? And I also thought it was a strange question because, you know, I'd been practicing martial arts for quite a few years, and, you know, I knew that from that particular world.
Right.
But for sure,
there's our music. I'm sorry. We're going to have to interrupt you again. I'm in the middle of a thought, but hold that thought. So you encountered a physician who basically began to work with you around breathing. And listeners, I'm sure Paul's going to be able to share with us what it means to breathe properly, why that's so important. We'll be back in just a few moments. Well, we are here with Paul Fox. His website is sacredjourneytherapy.com, and he's a practitioner of incredible esoteric skills in his work as a psychotherapist, and he's been sharing how he came to do the work he does today. He left the corporate world not because he was inspired to choose the path he's on now, but because he wasn't living a bearable life. He'd become a human doing and is now sharing how he learned to be a human being and how he assists others with that transformation from kind of doing our lives to being in our lives. I think that's what you're sharing. At least that's how what it sounds like to me. So, Paul, you met this physician. He basically, your wife was taking yoga. You met this physician, and he noticed right away, he said, you're not breathing.
Right. And so, yeah, we'll call this, you know, breathing with Bill or something. Bill was his name. And he had me get on the medical examining table, and he put a book on my abdomen, you know, on my lower abdomen, just around my, around my belly button or just below that. And, you know, at the time I thought, how strange is this? What's going on with this? And, you know, in hindsight, it's almost comical. But, you know, as I was breathing, what I thought was normal breathing, you know, he pointed out the book is not moving. And in other words, I'm breathing specifically in the upper part of my chest. And, you know, he pointed out that that tends to be the way people breathe when they're afraid. It tends to be the way people breathe when they're under incredible stress, when they're not relaxed, when they're not in touch with themselves, when they're not grounded. And although he said all those words, and I understand what each one of those words mean, didn't mean what it does today, if that makes sense. So I took all that information and, you know, I tried to work with it. He also encouraged me to join a men's group, which was quite pivotal at the time. So I worked together with about 12 other men for about 5 years I was in the group. And that helped me at least to feel not so much like an alien, like I was the only one that thought a particular way, but I saw that there were other men that thought or had questions, at least, similar to what I had. So that was quite supporting and quite pivotal for me. And then the next piece, which really, really, really cracked things open for me, was an experience at this time, you know, struggling with trying to figure out, okay, how do we make money? What do we do? My wife and I had opened a health club. And in this health club, there was a martial arts studio that I was teaching out of. And the rest of it was nutritional supplements and weight machines and aerobic studio and those types of things. But anyway, in the martial arts studio, I had a young student, forget his age, probably in his 20s at that time. And he mentioned to me, oh, I'm going to go and do this Reiki workshop thing. I had no idea what it was. But I thought, okay, good for you, away you go. And but what I noticed when he came back the next week was there was an incredible change in this person in a very short time, within a week. His sense of who he was completely different. The way he held his body was different. The way he moved was different. The way he would engage in eye contact was different. Like, you know, I can itemize these things now, but at the time, it just seemed he was different, and I couldn't really put my finger on it. And so I said, you know, well, what was that experience like? What the heck happened to you? And he said, you know, it's an amazing thing, and I can't really describe it to you. You have to go and try it yourself. And, you know, being kind of on the path at this point and trying to wake up and struggling with different directions and wanting to try almost anything, I said, okay, I'll do this. I'll do a Reiki, first degree Reiki workshop. And I signed up with my teacher at that time, an amazing guy, incredibly gifted, incredibly talented, Bernard Morin. And he was teaching out of Lakefield at that time. And I had this absolutely life-altering, life-shattering experience.
Now, he's been a mentor for several of my guests, particularly recently. So his name comes up a lot.
Yeah, an amazing guy. He has a variety of just phenomenal experiences that just seem impossible to the average person, but they are real. They are true. And much like some experiences I've had, if I would have heard somebody describe them at a particular point in my life, I would not have believed them. But it's different when you have an authentic experience. It helps to question, is this all there is? In other words, how could that have happened to me? How could I have experienced that? How could I have seen this? If all these other things that I've been taught are true, how does it all come together? How does that make sense? So when you have this authentic experience, it allows us to hold some of the teachings that we've had in the past a little bit more lightly so that we can, instead of excluding things, we can say this could be true and this other thing could be true too.
Right.
Now, I don't know how it matches, but they could be true at the same time. And so Bernard is an amazing, gifted mentor, teacher, who has the capacity to really hold space, a loving space for somebody, as they progress on their own journey.
Right. And, you know, you have an article. I just want to, this is a good time to bring this up. you talk, I'm just going to go over here right away. Just let me get the, have you ever heard someone say, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual?
Yeah.
Have
you
said it yourself? What does it really mean? You know, and I just, you talk about our religions being under siege. And I had the thought when I read that, it's not just our religions, everything's under siege. You know, it's the family, it's relationships. And this is definitely not our parents' world, and that people are understanding that something fundamental to our natures and our capacity for, you know, not just happiness but joy is somehow out of reach. And so you're really, it sounds to me like the work that you did with Bernard began to move some energies that just opened you, expanded your ideas of what was possible. And,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, that's all right. So I was just, you know, this would be a time to, would you characterize that then as a spiritual or a religious experience? I mean, was the experience for you one of really wanting now to understand what this higher communication was all about?
Yeah, it kind of fragmented my world in a way that I realized everything could not fit. Everything that I had experienced could not fit within the left side of my brain the way I understood things.
Excellent.
The way,
okay.
You know, one yeah. plus two plus three kind of thing. It just, the experiences that I had would not fit in there. And because of that, it kind of threw me into turmoil for sure, for a short time. But then it started to open up my, I guess, potential to look at, okay, What is this energy? What does that mean? How does that impact me? How does that impact other people? How do we impact each other? What happens when I sit in a room with somebody and we don't say anything? There are no words. How do we actually exchange energy? And so, you know, in that time frame then, I touch on a variety of different modalities that you've mentioned already. But really the focus, the touchstone, the grounding piece for me was really working with Bernard and going to him and saying, will you be my mentor? Will you be my teacher? And I more or less apprenticed with him for quite a while, or that's the way I would term it, as I was his apprentice. And others have been also. I'm not the only one. But it's an amazing place to be, where you can be with somebody who you know holds your best interest in heart and yet isn't afraid to tell you you're full of crap.
No, right? I know. Those are extraordinarily valuable relationships when people are willing, because if someone truly loves you, they want you to be your best. They want you to get yourself unstuck. And that does require sometimes hearing things that we'd really rather not hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Bernard is amazing at that. He has this capacity to really hold space for somebody when they're struggling, when they're in pain. But like a really, really good friend, or what I would suggest a really good friend would be, is somebody who can share a perspective with you that isn't exactly the one that you hold, but could also be true and could help to shift your point of view a little bit, shift you in a way that might be healthier for the way you're trying to exist. So he's really quite a master at that, and a master, an energetic master, I would say, in many, many ways.
Right.
So that journey with Bernard really transformed my life.
Well, I have a question for you, because
sure.
this worked around Reiki, but you have, you know, you have done shamanic work and you've done hypnosis, and I just want to know, was there something about you that you went after these practices, or did these practices kind of find you? Does that make sense?
Yeah. What happened, you know, earlier in my life is I think I was ruled more by fear and held back from things that I, you know, even if I thought I might try it, if there was any kind of niggling of fear, it would be, nope, not going to go there. Whereas after getting involved with Bernard and Reiki and, you know, being on that kind of cutting edge of fear, what I actually do now is I move towards it. Because
okay.
moving, you know, I don't throw myself off a building kind of thing, but
right.
if I push myself towards my growing edge, which is usually a little bit fearful, a little bit challenging, a little bit stressful, amazing things can happen. Mm-hmm. And so that's how. So how do I, you know, touch on some of these other things? Well, from the opening of Reiki, then it became interesting to say, well, what is shamanic journeying? And Bernard taught that from his experience, and so I went on and took other courses as well. Did remote viewing. You know, went to the Monroe Institute, and so all of these things are energy work experiences that they seem to catch my interest, but they also push me to my cutting edge.
Well, I really like that, because other people have said, and this is something I'll be honest with, I'm still working with this in my life. There's our music, we got to go, but the idea of embracing, I mean, not go, just go for the break, embracing our fear, because fear is primarily what is keeping us stuck, and it seems, you know, counterintuitive that we would want to embrace that, and yet when we can move those energies, you're right, great things can happen. We're taking our last break of the first hour, listeners. We'll be back, and Paul will be with us in the second hour. So stay tuned. We have a lot more to share. Fear. What a loaded word. Paul Fox of SacredJourneyTherapy.com is here sharing with us this morning. And he was just describing how he has learned to work with this fear. And I just want to share my experience with fear. Like Paul, it was such an ever-present reaction to the world. I couldn't recognize it. You know, there's a saying, Paul, does a fish know what water is? Well, probably yeah. Not until you take him out of it, right?
Exactly.
All of a sudden he becomes acutely aware of what water is. And it's such a ubiquitous, ingrained emotion. And one of my other guests, Jeff Gallagher, has written a book called Moving to Fear. And he believes fear has become a cultural value, so much is it used to motivate and manipulate us. But I think it's worth developing what you were discussing, you know, just spend a little bit more time with that, because we don't rid ourselves of fear. We learn to recognize it and move with it and through it. It's a tremendously powerful energy if we can get it to work for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where courage comes in. It's our courage to push forward at the speed that we can handle, but to push our personal boundaries and to push our personal, you know, growing edge. And when we do that, we're continually, with courage, moving in the face of fear, whatever that happens to be for each of us uniquely. And each time, or at least my experience has been, each time I move towards that fear, some amazing thing opens up as I push through it or push past it. It can be a challenge as you move up to it, but it's like going through this threshold that releases tons of energy, releases new capacities, more resilience for life, kind of more joy for life. It's an amazing experience. It's hard to really put in words other than...
Well, it sounds to me like there's got to be a willingness to take risks.
Yeah.
And, you know, the world, the way the dominant worldview, the dominant idea is that we, you know, we should always be seeking security and safety, right? And if we're doing that, we really aren't permitting ourselves to take risks that could open us up. And that's been, you know, I can look back in hindsight and wish I'd done certain things in my life differently because, like you, I kind of one day just said, I've had it. I didn't have a plan. I just had it.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, I wish that I had perhaps thought about things a little more along better lines, but, you know, it is what it is. And it's this essence of taking risks. You know, I've attended conferences where speakers are now basically saying to people, it's a very different world. You know, the idea that you go to college, you get a job, you have a career, you're there for 30 years, you retire. It's not that world anymore. We need to continually be growing and expanding ourselves if we want to be able to maintain. It's kind of a paradox. You know, we have to take risks in order to have a certain measure of security in being able to meet our needs. And yet it's not the way most of us have been brought up to think about it.
Right, right. And that's where it becomes difficult, is by following kind of the traditional views, we really back ourselves into a real problem. And we back ourselves in because we're following somebody else's direction blindly, unwittingly, and we're really not following our own inner guidance. And so then we're not authentically doing what we need to do. One way I often describe it is... you know, when I'm working with clients or even speaking the way we're speaking is, you know, if you and I go into the future sometime, and we're sitting in an old folks' home, and we're sitting in these two rocking chairs side by side, and we're looking out over a really nice scene, you know, out into nature or something, and at that time, what I really want to be able to do, as we're rocking away there and reminiscing, I want to be able to look over to you and say, do you remember that time when I did da-da, whatever that thing is, right?
Right.
And then we're either going to laugh and say, that was the stupidest thing you ever did. Oh, my God, you've got that big scar on your leg or whatever it happens to be, right? So that would be one thing. Another thing might be, you remember that time, da-da, and that was a profound moment in my life which actually changed the direction of my life. Am I ever glad I did that?
That's
so those are two
even
very
if it
cool
was
options.
Messy, yeah, even if it was messy and a little scary. Paul, that's our top. This is our top of the hour. We will be back on at 6 past the hour to continue our conversation with you. Okay, so if you need to take a break. And listeners, I have several more questions for Paul, and I encourage you to visit his website, sacredjourneytherapy.com, because there is a paradigm shift occurring, and people like Paul are really on the leading edge of taking us through that paradigm shift. So I want to thank you for being with us, and we'll be back at 6 past the hour.